Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. John, it's a good thing we're not in Portland, where they're talking about over 110 degrees. That is excessive heat, my friend, in a city that has per capita the fewest air conditioning units. So not a good place to be. Seattle talking about around 110. So very weird. Even across the border in British Columbia, the hottest temperature ever recorded in Canada, 114 degrees. Some kind of a weird high-pressure dome over the northwest, but it's good news for us. It's going to bring some rain coming up from the south, so we are very hopeful for a very productive, moist week. It is Monday, June 28th, 2021. We're in our, well, we're 10 and a half years now into the radio project. Our studio sponsor is Green Things in Zocalo Village. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means you can listen to the program anywhere in the world by going to my website, buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com. Our live line presented by our friends over at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday political face-off is sponsored and has been since pretty much day one, not pretty much, from day one of the radio program, and that is Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985. Check out their revamped and updated website. Some great e-commerce items there. Family owned and run. They know how to take care of Tucsonans, and they've been doing it a long time. They're right next to Copenhagen, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and the website is Moe's Gallery and MoesGallery.com. Our team of commentators this week, we have Aaron Rottenstein returning for a visit. It's been a while since Aaron, actually pre-COVID days, since Aaron has been with us back in studio, former treasurer of the Pima County Democratic Party. Aaron, how are you and your fine young family?
We're all doing good. Thanks for asking.
That's good. Good to see you out and about again. And with us seated to my right, one-time congressional candidate, current chair of the Pima County Republican Party, Shelley Keiss. Shelley, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Are you managing to stay cool?
Absolutely.
What are you doing to stay cool these days?
Well, you know, I was raised in Panama, so the fact that we don't have humidity is what makes me happy. I can stay cool sitting in the on the back patio.
Yeah, because the anybody that's been to Panama, I mean, it's very beautiful, but the humidity level is usually about 80 to 100%. So yes, it can get kind of steamy. Let's begin with kind of the big story, and that is the bipartisan effort that's underway. Shelley, why don't you begin? Do Republicans seem amenable to some kind of a compromise on this deal?
Well, it appeared so on Thursday. It looked like our Republican negotiators stood with the Democrats and the president and announced that they had reached a deal that they thought was a good deal for the American people. And everyone appeared fairly excited about this at that time.
And then what happened?
Well, and then President Biden tied it to the reconciliation. President mm-hmm. Biden, Speaker Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer.
Was it Biden then walked that back, Aaron?
Yeah, and I think more importantly, Republicans that have been part of these negotiations have kind of walked back there and transcendence on this too. Look, if your precondition for making a deal is that the party that's in power can't pass other legislation, I don't think that that's going to go very far. That's certainly not the way that Congress has conducted itself in the past, and to set that as the threshold is just insane. We need to pass an infrastructure bill. What this bipartisan, you know, agreement is starting to look like is a really good down payment on it. But the truth of the matter is the American people are demanding a lot more than that, and that's what Democrats are trying to accomplish this year.
Shelley, the tying it to other legislation, what you just heard Aaron, his take on it. What's your take on what Aaron just said?
Well, I don't think that the Republicans tied it to other legislation. I think they were fully aware of the fact that President Biden's initiatives were going to be a three-part, the Rescue Act, the Infrastructure Act, and the Families Act. But what they are not going to do is they are not going to be held hostage by Nancy Pelosi's comments that, we ain't going to pass this unless we have a reconciliation bill. That's holding people hostage. Mm-hmm. So they are separate pieces of legislation. They should be considered as such. And the fact that we've got Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer saying that they are linked together, and President Biden having to do a 48-hour flip-flop, that just in good faith, I think that the Republicans have come back out and said, you know what, the fight here is really in your party, so you go ahead and you clean that up and then we'll talk.
But everybody does appear, Shelley, to agree we need infrastructure in a bad way in this country. We need
absolutely.
To, I mean, some of our expressways go back to just post-World War II, airports, you name it. We need to really take a hard look at this.
Yes, and this is nothing new. President Bush talked about it, President Obama, President Trump, and now President Biden as well.
I want to be clear here. This is not a bipartisan agreement in the way that Shelley is leading us on. This is not going to get a single Republican vote in the U.S. House. This is barely and maybe going to get 10 Republican votes in the Senate. The vast majority of the American people, up to 70%, depending on how you look at this, want this bill done. And we're looking at maybe 8% of congressional Republicans voting for this. And so when she says, absolutely, we need this bill, what she's saying is that her party, the elected officials in her party, are not doing what she's asking them to do. And they're certainly not doing what we're asking them to do.
Well, thank you, Aaron, but please don't put words in my mouth. I am saying that this is a bipartisan bill. We saw Republicans and Democrats working together. And just as much as it's going to be incumbent upon our Republican legislators now to go back to the House and the Senate and to whip up the votes, it will also be incumbent upon the Democrats to do so. If you listen to your very own party, you listen to AOC, you listen to Pelosi, you listen to Schumer, they're saying they're not going to do it. So it sounds like there's a little whipping that needs to take place in both sides of the House.
This is going to pass with nearly every Democrat, if not every single Democrat, voting for it. They're the majority party. People, even in states like Georgia, who knew exactly what they were voting for after this election, decided to send two Democratic senators to the United States Senate and give us control of that chamber as well. The idea that we're not going to discuss other legislation as a majority party with our president in the White House is absolutely insane. Delay is a precondition for a bill that's supported by 70% of the American people.
That's not a precondition, though. That's the difference. It's not a precondition. The precondition is that you're not going to link these two bills together. Not that you're not going to discuss it. Of course, we know we're going to discuss it. Believe me, Republicans want what's best for our country and our families as well. You don't have to look too far. You can look right here in Tucson, Arizona, and see that our Democratic leadership has left us with potholed streets and litter-filled sidewalks. So we know this needs to be done. We see the crumbling bridges. Aaron, you lived in D.C., so I'm assuming you've driven across that George Washington Bridge a couple of times and the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Those are scary experiences. We do need to fix this. And President Biden has put forth an infrastructure bill that has been negotiated by Republicans and Democrats. The only thing we're saying is, let's talk about this legislation. Don't hold it linked to another piece of legislation and try and hold people hostage.
The people she's talking about that are saying they aren't going to vote for this bill in the first place.
What would it take for them to vote for it, Shelley? You're saying they wouldn't vote for it.
Yeah. And so
I don't know anybody who won't vote for it.
She's saying that they would vote for it.
If they were going to vote for this, this would have been negotiated by leadership. This was a bipartisan group that broke off of party leadership in order to get it done. This is a bill that's being constructed to get barely 60 votes in the United States Senate, and that's incumbent on all 50 Democrats voting for it, in addition to 10 Republicans. No one's going after a bill and no one expects this bill, Shelley included, to see overwhelming bipartisan support. We are cobbling together what's absolutely necessary to fix those roads and those bridges that Shelley's talking about. In addition to that, there are a lot of other things that make it harder to get to work, harder to get out on our roads, and we're going to pass a bill that covers those things too.
We'll take the break right here and talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. That's something everybody can get on board with, whether you're Republican or Democrat, Green Party, Independent, who libertarian, whatever, everybody likes bakery goods. I know that for a fact because they have had a really great recovery from the pandemic up at Mona's. Find out what all the excitement is about. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are closed today because Steve, the owner and chief baker, does need a day off, and he is taking it this summer every Monday. However, they will be back open tomorrow at 6:30 for breakfast. And, of course, many people find that it's a great place to stop for lunch as well. The website is monasdanishbakery.com. We'll be right back with our Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. And the Buckmaster Show continues right after this.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and our Monday political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing right next to Copenhagen, and they have a great e-commerce site right now at moesgallery.com. So they're centrally located Fort Lowell and Dodge. Stop by and check them out. You will get back, I believe, museum quality work when you take in your items to be framed. They do a fantastic job at Moe's. Our team of commentators today on the Monday Political Face-Off, seated to my right, Shelley Keiss. Shelley is the chair of the Pima County Republican Party. Shelley, you took over when? When did you take over from the chairmanship?
December 19th.
December 19th. And Aaron Rottenstein. Aaron is the former treasurer of the Pima County Democratic Party. He really was very much at one point very busy with Democratic politics, but then the young family called, as did work. So he had to kind of put that aside, right, Aaron, for a while?
Yeah. And, you know, the nice thing is those relationships and those, you know, campaigns you work on when you're involved with the party, you get to see those candidates grow. And, you know, this year, for example, we got Katie Hobbs running for governor.
Right.
It was, you know, very exciting to see her take leadership in the state Senate and then, you know, statewide office. You know, Kirsten Engel is another great example. She got elected for the first time in a pretty tricky race in LD10 in 2016. And watching her run for Congress now, it's exciting and it keeps us involved.
That's going to be kind of a crowded field. You have Dr. Fries as well in there.
And Daniel.
Daniel Hernandez.
Yeah, we've got a really great bench.
Involved.
Yeah. No, and that's, you know, I think the real kind of fruit from Democrats becoming more competitive and successful in Arizona is we're seeing this really exciting bench mature. And we have, I mean, we have more options than we need. And I think CD2 is a great example of that, where we have three really high quality candidates, where Republicans are still just really struggling to find folks that are, you know, the same caliber and the same, you know, credibility.
And Shelley, one of your you are charged with really bringing in quality candidates and recruiting. I mean, that's part of what you do.
Yep.
And how has that gone for you now? You're about, it's kind of the 6-month mark of your leadership with the GOP. How is that going? Give us an overview.
Well, I think we're going to see a very strong bench of candidates. We're going to see a competitive race in CD2. We will certainly have more than one candidate, extremely qualified candidates that I think people are going to be very happy to see. And we are going to be bringing forth a very strong bench statewide of candidates for the legislature. So we are we're seeing a lot of activity, a lot of people stepping up, a lot of people waiting to see what redistricting brings.
I wonder how many are in on the sidelines on that, you know.
A lot.
And what are you hearing? Are they waiting for those maps to come out? And do we know when that's going to happen? Perhaps the fall?
And we think in the late fall, but the first meetings in Tucson are going to be on the I believe it's the 6th and the 7th of August, and they'll be in the morning, so you will be able to go and speak before the Independent Redistricting Commission about your issue for where you are currently voting, and so you want to talk about communities of interest and competitiveness.
The map may not change that much, though. That could be the reality, too, Aaron, right?
Yeah, we'll see. This is the first time, certainly in my lifetime, that Arizona didn't pick up a congressional seat in the reapportionment, and I think a lot of that's due to the just
and
terrible
job. And
that
was a surprise.
It was, but, you know, when we look back at how poorly the census, as well as the rest of the government, was run for several years, I think you can kind of expect weird anomalies like this. Certain parts of the state have grown quite a bit when you're looking at the legislative map that you got to cut up 30 ways. And the challenging thing about the legislature in particular is they're very, very they're very big sticklers on, you know, residency in terms of the districts there. And in a lot of ways, I think that's a good thing, but it is kind of changing the field here. And frankly, I think it's one of the reasons why, when you look at, you know, the fact that we've got three legislative candidates running for a congressional primary, that job was, you know, instantaneously so appealing to some of them, because you don't really know who your constituency might be going forward.
Do you think, Shelley, that some are obviously waiting because I don't think in CD2, Shelley Keiss, we do not have a declared candidate. I mean,
no.
David Gowan has talked about it. I would expect, I don't know, he's probably waiting for the redistricting maps, right?
Yes, and Senator Gowin actually lives down in Sierra Vista.
Okay.
So, there will be more candidates than Senator Gowin as well.
Right. Who are you hearing? Juan Ciscomani, perhaps?
Well, so here's my deal. When I talk to a candidate, I promise them that I'm going to let them be the first one to make their announcement.
Talk about it on the radio with Bill Buckmaster about who's going to be in. But you do expect it will be, I don't want to say crowded field, but it will be a competitive field.
It'll be competitive.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Aaron, how are Democrats doing locally, do you think?
You know, I think we're doing...
I know you're not officially with the local party, but you've got a lot of friends and keep track of what's going on.
No, of course. And I think when you look, you know, and obviously when you're asking questions like that, there's two things. You know, one, it's, you know, how are families doing in, you know, Southern Arizona and Arizona more broadly. And I think right now we've kind of seen what the voters want. And it's frightening this week that we're seeing Republicans in the legislature trying to pass a budget that really is an affront to them. This budget is a slap in the face to the voters, and it's a stab in the back to our schools. Just last November, 1.7 million Arizonans, including a pretty sizable majority here in Pima County, voted for Prop 208, which was going to increase funding for our schools and raise taxes on the wealthiest Arizonans. Republicans in this budget are using some tricks to get rid of both of those things. They're cutting funding from schools. They're giving the wealthiest Arizonans an expected tax cut of over $350,000 a year in this bill, getting rid of that 208 funding. Meanwhile, 75% of Arizonans are only going to see less than $100 from that bill. And so we've learned what, you know, in spite of what we can do at the local level, what Republicans are willing to do in education in the state, which is literally give a tax break bigger than a house to the wealthiest in Arizona and less than a cup of coffee a week to the rest of us.
Shelley, what do you make of what's going on up at the legislature?
Well, I think that I think the budget looks like a pretty good budget. It we were still waiting for the criminal justice and the education bills to pass. Mm-hmm. So we're really still kind of waiting on that. But I think, you know, to bring it home and to Aaron's point, I think it's really important for us to realize that, you know, right here in Tucson, in the Tucson Unified School District and the Sunnyside Unified School District, we see such excessive failures, that we see such growth down in Sarita, Vail, Marana. Mm. We see growth where families are realizing that the Democrat-run city of Tucson and much of Pima County are not delivering on their promises for our hardworking families. So they are moving out to the incorporated areas where they are finding excellent schools, safe communities, strong leadership, good governing. And so I think that as we continue to see that, and much of those areas under Republican leadership, that people are starting to recognize that when it comes to good governing, it is coming from the Republicans. In addition to, we have to see our revitalization in downtown Tucson. And as we see that, we have to remember that came from the Republican legislature to Rio Nuevo. Mm. So we are starting to be able to demonstrate much of our successes here in Southern Arizona.
The exodus from Tucson that Shelley is talking about, I don't know how much, you know, how big an exodus it is, but it does play a role in taxes, the tax rate, and trying to get police officers. That's an area of concern, Aaron.
Yeah, crime is a big concern right now, and it's a growing, you know, problem in this country that we need to address. Violent crime was up 30% last year, and there's no reason to think that it hasn't changed right now. Another word for violent crime is gun violence. And while crime was up 30% last year, gun and ammo sales were up 50% last year. And if you don't think those two things are connected, I have some really bad news for you about the tooth fairy. If we're going to get serious about reducing crime in our community and in this country, we need to make sure that criminals, domestic abusers, and those most likely to use those weapons violently have a harder time getting them.
And because we see such an increase coming across our border, just today we announced the significant increase in criminals coming across our border and the announcement of 33,000 gang members in the United States. So we can't just say the number of people who own guns is directly related to crime. We need to look at our southwest border that has just been decimated under the Biden administration. I was down on the southwest border on Friday night, and I actually saw the new wall. I stood right at the base of the new wall, and I was with approximately 40 sheriffs who were from Massachusetts to Idaho to Florida to Texas to New Mexico, who came to stand in solidarity with our sheriffs to secure the southern border. This is a really exciting time for Republican leadership to demonstrate how we understand the importance of governing public safety, the ability to care for our families. And so we are working very hard to do that.
All right. Coming up next, a conversation with former Pima County Sheriff and now Chief of Staff for the Cochise County Sheriff's Department, Mark Napier. He's in the house. He is in the waiting room. He will be our next guest as we wrap up our Monday political face-off. Aaron Rottenstein, good to see you, Aaron.
It's
we'll
great
see,
to
you
see you
a couple
too.
Of times this summer. And Shelley Keist, now a regular with the Monday political face-off. Shelley, it's good to see you. Thank you very much. And by the way, folks, can go to buckmastershow.com. We have our contributors page, and you'll see a picture of Shelley and her very impressive bio. That's all up at buckmastershow.com. Have a great week, Shelley. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and so, happy Independence Day.
Same to you. Fireworks at Sahorita?
On the 3rd.
On the 3rd.
Down at Rancho Sahorita.
There you go. Aaron, great to see you again.
Likewise. Take care.
All right. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Our thanks to Moe and his family for their continued support of our work here on The Buckmaster Show. Mark Napier is next.
CBS News Brief. Day 5 for rescue workers searching through the condo building rubble in Surfside, Florida. And day 5 of family members waiting for word on their loved ones. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
The search continues and it will not stop until there's a resolution. We're also working to bring relief to the family members. And that involves relocation assistance. It involves things like mental health counseling.
Temps are in the triple digits in the Pacific Northwest, and CBS meteorologist David Parkinson says we could see more heat records broken today.
Just absolutely incinerating temperatures in the West.
You gotten your shot, so how long will that vaccine protect you?
New data published today showed the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines provided robust immune responses many months out, and that's certainly encouraging for the duration of the response.
Dr. David Aga says they could protect for years without a booster shot. CBS News Brief, I'm Stacy Lynn.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your health care by taking your medicines safely.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I am so happy I'm in Tucson, Arizona, and not Portland or Seattle. Now, if I was over right on the Oregon coast, might be a different story. However, I looked up Cannon Beach, and it was 89 degrees at the beach. I mean, it's normally in the 50s and 60s, so Northwest is not where you want to be right now. I'm glad I'm in Tucson and anticipating the rain that is supposed to come in starting tomorrow. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and everybody's excited at Green Things. Obviously, the rain will very much green everything up on their 13-acre site at 3384 East River Road. They also have beautiful merchandise in Zocalo Village, five freestanding shops that they call the village, and there's some great merchandise there as well. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the websites. Our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, former Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier. Mark served as sheriff of Pima County for 4 years and was narrowly defeated in November, and he is now in Cochise County at the Sheriff's Department, where he is the chief of staff. Good to see you, Sheriff.
It is so good to see you, my friend. It's good to be back here.
How is your role over there? I mean, you're doing pretty much running the department, right?
Yeah, when the election was over, Sheriff Daniels asked me to come down and be, if you could equate it to a corporate environment, I'm the chief operating officer. Basically, I take care of all the day-to-day operations for the department, both administratively, operationally, and tactically. So the department reports to me, and I report to the sheriff, and it's a good fit. Great people down there. I've got a great cadre of six lieutenants, two commanders, a couple of civilian direct reports, and then a department of about 200 people.
It's a small department compared to what you were working with, certainly in Pima County, but the problems are you got retention, you've got salary issues, so those problems are pretty much the same, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say law enforcement's facing some universal problems: hiring, retention, compensation. You know, fiscal management is always going to be a problem in public sector. I'm very proud of the fact that I came on in January, and we really worked hard on our budget, and our budget has been passed by the Board of Supervisors on a unanimous vote, which is great. And we got about $800,000 in compensation increases for our correction staff, our sworn staff, and our support staff, which sometimes is overlooked, but we were able to push through a package that does all those things. I had to give up a few things, but that's really what it's about, Bill. I mean, you're not going to get everything. As much as we want an ice cream cone and a pony, we're not always going to get that. Mm-hmm. So I try to be very balanced in the way that I approach it. We needed to be more marketplace competitive. Our corrections officers were not marketplace competitive at all. They will be now in January. They are, or July, I'm sorry. And our deputies are better compensated. So we really went, much like I did with Pima County, from the bottom up, trying to increase that starting pay to attract more people into the department.
What is it like in that type of an environment? Early in my career, I worked in Sierra Vista. It was one of the first radio jobs I had. And I remember back in the day working with the Cochise County Sheriff's Department, and they used to track people on horseback. This was back in like 1972, but it was fun for me as a young guy and young newsman, and hanging out with the deputies there in their cowboy hats, and they were on horses and stuff. But this is a rural department that you are charged with in many ways keeping up to speed and running. How are the challenges different than an urban setting like the Tucson metro area? Well, I mean, certainly Pima County, you had rural areas too.
Yeah. Pima is a blend, a very unique blend of very metropolitan areas and very rural areas, where Cochise County tends to be much more rural. So staffing and geography, I mean, the deployment of personnel in an area that big when a smaller department, there are times where we cannot even put people in the field 24 hours a day. So there are times where deputies are on call. So they'll get off work and there won't be a deputy in the county, and that deputy will be on call because of the geography. And the other unique thing about Cochise is that each population center has its own police force. So Bisbee has a police department, Benson has a police department, Sierra Vista, Douglas, et cetera. Where here in Pima County, we have the foothills, where we are the police department. Vail, we are the police department. Mm-hmm. And Green Valley, we are the police department. Mm-hmm. So these population centers are more urban policing, where pretty much Cochise is all ranch lands and rural policing. We have a ranch squad of deputies that their specific mission is to interact with ranchers and in the more remote areas. It's a great blend. It's kind of like going full circle for me, Bill. I started as a police officer in Iowa in 1981.
In a very small town, as I recall.
Very small town, and I can't believe that's going to be 40 years coming up in December. But
wow.
And so I'm kind of accustomed to that. So I've kind of come full circle. I went to Tucson Police, very big department, and then up to Glendale as an assistant chief there, and then the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Now I've kind of come back to that more rural, more
Do you like
policing.
Kind of the rural lifestyle?
I love it in my heart. I'm a country boy by heart, but as a police executive, I'm more comfortable in that more urban environment. Mm-hmm. That's where I've cut my teeth. That's where the bulk of my experience is. I'm used to running much larger agencies, much more budgets, larger number of personnel and stuff. But like I said, I just have some fantastic people down in Cochise County. I'm very fond of them. We're moving forward. We're rewriting our policies, redoing our promotional processes. I said we're looking at our entire compensation structure to make us more competitive. There's a lot going good down there right now.
Do you get some young people that want to work in the sheriff's department, but they've been there's other opportunities for them? I mean, what is your pay package on a comparable to with other rural counties? How does that work?
We're pretty competitive now. We weren't when I came in, but I think we're much more competitive now. There's always, compensation management's chasing a black cat in a dark room. I know my wife, darling wife, Marlene, is listening with our two grandchildren, Alexis and Eli. She's babysitting.
How old are those grandchildren?
Alexis, you're 4 years old, not
wow.
five. You keep telling Grandpa you're five, but you're not. Alexis,
jumping the gun there.
Alexis, you're five. Mm-hmm. And Eli, who should say Grandpa right now, say uh-huh. Grandpa, is a year and a half. And but I remember telling Marlene when we got married in 1983, I said, honey, if I could ever make $10 an hour, we'll have the world by the tail. And it was true, Bill. In 1983, that was true. So, you know, you chase compensation management, and you've got to balance that in the public sector with what is the tolerance of the elected officials who control the purse strings, in this case, the Board of Supervisors. What is the revenue stream to the county? You're not going to get everything you want, and what you have to do is balance that, and you have to make strategic decisions about compensation management. And I don't like it, because no matter how hard you try, and I do try hard, I really work at this very hard, I'm a frustrated accountant sometimes, I think, you're never going to do everything you want to do, and you're never going to give them everything you feel they deserve, but you've got to find that balance. Mm-hmm. And finding that balance is hard to do, and generally you don't make everybody happy, and it is a tough business.
It seems like that I almost said nobody wants to get into law enforcement these days, and obviously that's not true, but I would think fewer people do because of the challenges and all the bad publicity surrounding policing in this country.
It is a challenge, and millennials as a hiring body are different. I'm a baby boomer. All I wanted was a roof over my head, food in my stomach, and be able to provide for my family. That's right. A baby boomer. We're nesters, Bill.
Yep. Yep.
Millennials want a career with purpose, and they want to be mobile. Well, being mobile doesn't work in law enforcement because it costs us about $100,000 to train and equip a new deputy. Well, we don't want to do that for 5 years while you explore whether this is a good fit or not. And the other problem is they've re-engineered the pension program. When I came on, you had to do your 20 years to get your pension. Well, there is no defined benefits program anymore. So there isn't that impetus to say, well, I've got to grind it out for 20 years. So getting the right people in the door and then retaining them is a significant challenge. And there's a lot of stresses in law enforcement. It has become a very heated, I would say, too political debate about the role of law enforcement. I mean, it's disheartening to young people who are saying, okay, I'm going to make a career choice. What should I do? I'm very proud of my son, Travis. He's got 9 years on now, and he's going to stick it with it and grind it out for his career.
At the Tucson Police Department?
He just transferred over to Marana. Yeah, he lives in Marana. His brother and youngest sister live in Marana, and he thought it would be good to police his home. Mm-hmm. And so he's transferred. He's in his second week in Marana. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he doesn't love the Tucson Police Department. I love the Tucson Police Department. I gave a large amount of my life to that agency. I care about the people there still, and many of them are still there that were there when I was there. But it was a good fit for Travis to go to Marana. It's not because he did dislike police, Tucson
was it
police.
Was it money?
Actually, the opposite of money. He actually took a little cut in pay, but he's going to be policing his home community.
Yeah, but when you hear somebody saying, well, they left Tucson to go to Marana or Oro Valley, you always think money.
Yeah, you know, but with millennials, money isn't everything.
Okay.
You know, it's not the primary driver. It is a driver to get them in the door, but you're not going to retain millennials strictly with money. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to give them career development. You're going to have to give them a sense of purpose with their career. And that's a challenge. If you Google hiring challenges in law enforcement, you'll come up with article after article after article of every community is facing exactly the same problems. It's very hard.
Lots more to talk with Mark Napier about. Mark in studio with me in the Buckmaster Show. Be right back on this Monday afternoon in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors, welcoming all of our friends from Tucson. It is a great place to cool off because of the elevation. That 5,000 to 7,000 feet does make a big difference. And I always say you're going to be about 10 degrees cooler at the very least, maybe 15 degrees cooler by making that three-hour drive from Tucson to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. The Gila National Wilderness is there and lots to do. You can find out all about it at southwestnewmexico.org. In fact, thank you, John, 63 degrees. They're getting a rain shower over in Silver City at midday. I'm sure the air smells wonderful. Mark Napier is here, and Mark's kind of close, not that far from Silver City. He's over in Cochise County, where he is the chief of staff of the Cochise County Sheriff's Department. There were sheriffs from all over the country, Sheriff, at the border this past weekend down in your county. What was that about?
Yeah, there were an event down there on John Ladd's Ranch, which is south of Sierra Vista, goes right up to the U.S.-Mexico border.
Huge ranch?
Huge ranch. Mm-hmm. John Ladd's been down there forever. Mm-hmm. Good man. And we brought sheriffs. The sheriffs came in from all over the country. And I think there's so much rhetoric, both on the right and the left, about what's going on the border. So when we have the opportunity to educate and show people what the border really is, because you can't imagine it if you've not been there, and what's really happening, not this far right rhetoric or far left rhetoric, but what's really happening on the border. And it is a challenge. It's a crisis down there on the border right now. And I would just ask people, and I've told this to folks before, but if you could tell me anywhere else in the civilized world that literally thousands of unaccompanied children, emphasis children, were approaching an international border, attempting to cross with no adult supervision whatever, where else in the civilized world would that not be a crisis? It would be a crisis anywhere. In fact, I would guess if it were happening in the Middle East or Europe or Asia, there would be an international hue and cry. We'd have the UN there. We would summon resources. And it's happening literally, Bill, in our own backyard. As you know, I'm a Christian and I'm a humanitarian, and the plight of human beings and people coming up to our southern border are first that. They're human beings, and many of them are fleeing very desperate situations that you and I cannot imagine, with food in our stomachs and a roof over our head and safety. And they're coming here for all the right reasons, but the victimization of these folks south of the border, and no matter how compassionate our policy is on the north side of the border, we can do nothing to ameliorate the conditions on the south side of the border.
Cartels running the who gets across.
And what it costs you to get across. Jeez. And so to tacitly encourage this, what is a very dangerous activity, is not compassionate public policy. It's quite the contrary. We know that the drug cartels are profiteering from human trafficking nearly as much as narcotics trafficking. That's not me saying that. You can Google, there's a RAND Corporation study on human trafficking, and RAND Corporation's not a right-wing think tank, and they estimate it might be as much as $2 billion a year, and that was
so before. The cartels are all in on human trafficking.
Well, it's a very clean business, and these people are paying the sexual criminal and financial victimization of these people as they approach our international border is horrific. And we need to do something to fix this. And, you know, when sheriffs along the border recover bodies in the deserts, well, it's one thing. Every time I saw these pictures, you can look and think, well, this is like National Geographic. You know, you find bones and partial skull or whatever, and it's like National Geographic. That's not what it is to me. It's not National Geographic. I look at that, and that's somebody's son.
Yeah.
That's somebody's husband. Mm. That's somebody's brother. Mm. That is a man who left El Salvador 5 years ago and told his family, we can't live here anymore. I'm going to try to come to America. I will send money and bring you to safety. And that was the last their family ever heard from that
person.
And
it ended in the desert.
It ended in the desert. We'll never know who that person was. Their family will never know but what befell them. This is a humanitarian crisis on so many levels. It's a public safety crisis with the influx of dangerous drugs across our border. We lost more people due to drug overdoses than to car accidents. If you'd have told me in 1981 that deputies, law enforcement officers, would be carrying medicine on their persons like a ballpoint pen or a flashlight, I would have said, well, that's crazy. That's what's happening today in this country. We're carrying naloxone and Narcan to save lives, and we're saving lives with this stuff. This bespeaks of a crisis. And we know that these lone actors, international bad actors, are more of lone wolves. We see this internationally where somebody will grab a machete and start chopping at people on a bridge or whatever. So the potential for a bad actor to cross our border is a national security concern. And I wish that both sides of the political aisle would simply focus on those three points, which are unimpeachable. There is a public safety crisis on our border that no one can deny. There's a humanitarian crisis that should pull on the heartstrings of every American, every humanitarian of every stripe. And there's a national security concern. So we got to drop politics. We got to drop this divisive rhetoric of vilifying these human beings, which really bothers me.
They're caught in the middle of this political
thing. They're caught in the middle. And if you or I woke up in El Salvador, Guatemala, or Honduras this morning, we'd probably try to be coming here too.
Yeah.
As we talked on break, my son-in-law, his heritage is from El Salvador. And my new grandson, who just turned 6 months old, is a Latino.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of my family. And it pulls on my heartstrings that we vilify and demonize these people. But then on the other side of the political spectrum, we're tacitly encouraging them to make this journey, which is going to lead to criminal, financial, and sexual victimization. We need to fix this. And people say to me, oh, Mark, it can't be fixed. Don't give me that. The capacity of the United States of America to fix difficult problems and do great things is tremendous. We won a civil war. We became the better angels of our nature in that process. A president said in 10 years, we'll put a man on the moon. We did it.
Yeah.
We survived a Great Depression. We have done amazing things. We have the capacity in this country when we come together, we lay politics aside to do amazing things. It's time to do that and get back to the roots of what made this country so great. And it isn't divisive politics. It's not the rhetoric on CNN or Fox. That's not what made this country great.
You know, I'd like to get your take in the remaining minute or two about this crisis in the, well, maybe it isn't a crisis, but we do know that violent crime is up in the United States. Why do you think that is? Why did that happen coming out of the pandemic or during the pandemic year?
There are a lot of causes for violent crime. And I wish that I could say there's this one thing. If we fix the one thing, everything will be fixed. And it's not that simple. And that's the problem, is we're always looking for the silver bullet. There isn't a silver bullet. There are a lot of causes of violent crime in this country. Socioeconomic disparities is a problem. Emphasis towards solving things with violence. I mean, just think of the political rhetoric alone. If somebody doesn't agree with me, they can't say, well, I disagree with Mark. I hate Mark.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's just become a fabric of the way that we are. I mean, clearly, their availability of guns is facilitates crime, but I don't think there's such a thing as gun violence. Guns don't perpetrate violence. Human beings do. So there are a lot of causes to this. I think the some very unhelpful rhetoric around law enforcement is a contributing factor. I think anybody that denies that's not being intellectually honest. So I think that is a contributing factor. The depolicing, meaning that we don't have sufficient staffing to engage in what's traditional community policing anymore. On most law enforcement agencies are not staffed in a way that we are very reactive in our posture. And I think all these things are a problem. But what we need to do is come together and not look for the silver bullet, but look for a lot of copper bullets we could fire with deliberation and good marksmanship to solve the problem. And again, politics gets in the way. Rhetoric gets in the way. Lay that stuff aside and look at what are the root causes of crime and attack the root causes. That's when we'll make the difference. It's not by attacking the symptoms. Violent crime is a symptom of a societal problem. Attack the cause, and you'll make a better difference.
All right, Mark Napier, thank you very much, Mark. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, my friend. It's good to see you.
That will do it for the Buckmaster Show Monday edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On behalf of Sheriff Mark Napier and John Couch, engineering and producing the show, we thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with you at 12:04 tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.